guard.
I fell off the back of the Norwegian Star, and I was in the water for 10 hours. So these wonderful guys rescued me.
Carrie Marafiotti is an American citizen who was also aboard the cruise ship.
I'm ecstatic that she was actually found alive. We just thought that that was crazy that after she was treading water for about 10 hours, that that was even possible.
Both Marafiotti and Longstaff were speaking on NBC's Today Show. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
The jury in the criminal trial against former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort resumed today. Manafort is being charged with 18 criminal charges of tax and bank fraud. You're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290.
First Lady Melania Trump spoke out today against cyberbullying as part of her Be Best campaign. The First Lady was speaking in Rockville, Maryland.
In today's global society, social media is an inevitable part of our children's daily lives. It can be used in many positive ways, but can also be destructive and harmful when used incorrectly.
What goes into writing a good and memorable monologue? Well, Greg Gutfeld is co-host of the TV show on Fox News, The Five. He's also a New York Times best-selling author, and he has a new book out titled The Gutfeld Monologues, Classic Rants from The Five. I had a chance to chat with Gutfeld and asked him what goes into or what's the key to a great monologue.
Well, first you got to find something that interests you and something that would interest other people. So that's step one. Step two is to figure out an angle that hasn't been addressed by everybody else. So if you see the same kind of media assumptions on about a story, let's say about tariffs or about the Mueller investigation, you have to find a way to address it in a way that hasn't been said before. And then the third and most important thing is that however you address it has to match the viewers at home's assumptions, although they didn't know it before. So it's like it causes them to go, aha, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Please remember you can check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy, host of Talented People Radio, produced by Mariah Media. Our show is fun, and we specialize on interviewing some of the most awesome people from around the world. Tune in and watch our live stream on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can watch past episodes. Talented People airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Join us for some fun.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. The weather today, mostly cloudy with a high near 78. East winds around 7 miles per hour. Tonight, a slight chance of showers after 3 a.m., and it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 64. East winds around 5 miles an hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, guess what? A slight chance of showers. Then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after noontime, and some of the storms could produce heavy rainfall. It'll be mostly cloudy with a high near 80. East winds 5 to 9 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 40%, and the new rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher amounts during the thunderstorms. Tuesday night, showers and a possible thunderstorm. Patchy fog, low around 69. Southeast winds around 6 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 80%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half of an inch. Wednesday night, Wednesday during the day, guess what? Chance of showers before 8 a.m., and then a chance of showers and thunderstorms between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. Oh, and then after 2 p.m., there's another chance of showers. Be patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise be mostly cloudy with a high near 83. West winds 6 to 9 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 40%. Wednesday night will be partly cloudy with a low around 59. And Thursday will be sunny. Wow, first day all week, that'll be sunny, with a high near 79. And Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 56.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon Cast. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged to have with us today Jennifer Kennedy. That's an easy name. I can say that without messing it up. And Jennifer is a licensed worker at the Hunterdon Hospice. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
I welcome having you. It's always nice to have someone from the hospital. And first of all, what exactly do you do there?
Well, I'm a social worker for hospice. On hospice, we see patients who are usually terminally ill, and they've been given 6 months or less to live. And we work as a team. So in addition to the nurses, we have social workers who work with the patients and their families in order to provide emotional support and resources. And then we follow people in bereavement for a year after the patient dies.
Okay. I ask this of just about everybody because once in a while somebody will say to me, something happened when I was 8 years old and I always wanted to be, a truck driver or a doctor or whatever. Other people like me, I had lost a job I had. I had 4 kids, a mortgage, car payments, taxes. I had to get a job, so I wound up working for Wonderbread, which turned out real good, in fact, but I, not delivering. I was in the plant. But so I asked people how you get in this line of work. So how did you get in this line of work?
Well, I got into social work. I was actually working in a nail salon and people were telling me their problems. So I decided I ought to go to school.
You were a social worker when you were doing the nails,
That's
right?
That's right. And then this particular job, I lost my newborn daughter, and I just really felt in touch with the grief that people feel when they lose somebody.
Yeah. It's, Friday we went to a viewing, and Saturday we went to the funeral of a friend of ours. She was going to be 93, I think, but she was in excellent health, and we knew her husband and everything, and we would go to breakfast and lunches and stuff like that, and she was so involved with helping everybody and her community and so on and so forth, and her family and it's just even at an elderly age, it's not easy to lose someone,
Absolutely.
Their mother and, their sister and, what have you. It is very hard.
It is very hard. It's probably one of the hardest things we are put to go through on this earth.
And I can't imagine losing a child. Okay, we have 4 kids and, I can't imagine, losing any of them or, prior to us going.
Right.
Which it happens, though, through, incurable or whatever diseases, or unfortunately, through NAMI, which I am a big part of, We see a lot of, you know, people with problems or whose loved ones committed suicide or what have you. And I can't imagine your job dealing with these people. I understand you're helping them greatly. That I, you know, no doubt. But does it affect you at all?
It does affect me. You know, I feel like it's an honor to be with people towards the end of their life. Like I'm allowed to share in that with some people. And I feel like I can really be of service and of help. So mm-hmm. then I'm feeling positive and I can get sad about losing my patients. I get close to people.
Sure.
And
it's only natural you get close to people.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely. So I'll get sad, of course, you know, but it's not my loss. So, you know, I know they have their own journey.
Right, right.
So I let them have their journey.
Quite a few, well, I won't say quite a few, at least 3-4 years ago, we had a volunteer on from hospice, and he was saying how much he enjoyed helping the people. And I thought that was awesome because me personally, I don't think I could do it. You know, I think it would have too much of an effect on me. Even with the friend who was, you know, almost 93, I think he was going to be 93 in September. I got very emotional at the service.
Sure.
You know, and we weren't like friends for 40 years, you
right.
know. And to think that somebody that is in the, that you know is in the last stages of their life and, you know, you're there to try to make it easier for them to pass on, I would find that, you know, I give you a lot of credit because I think, you know, you and the nurses and whoever the volunteers who have worked there, I think are awesome because I couldn't do it. I know that for a fact. I would be too emotional, you know. And a big klutz like me, you don't look at seeing he's emotional. But, yeah, that would be make me emotional.
Right. You know? And I think we're all cut out for different things, Larry.
I think so.
To be my thing. So
right.
I've teared up with my patients and with their families, and I go to a service once in a while. And, mm-hmm. you know, so
right.
really we try to walk this journey with people so that nobody is alone.
Well, you know, like in NAMI, which I am. Been involved with for almost 20 years. We have 4 children, like I said, and my youngest son is paranoid schizophrenic. But thank God he is doing very well now.
Oh,
in the last
wonderful.
Couple of years, he's been, a lot of the people in the hospital know him because he volunteers there one day a week on Mondays.
Oh.
And he works at BJ's. He's been there for 3.5 years and has his own apartment and takes his meds religiously and such. And he's come quite a long way from being hospitalized for a little over 3 years in a state hospital. But, you know, it's just dealing and now dealing with people because we run support groups and we teach classes and do presentations and people ask questions and seeing some of the people, what they're going through. Thankfully, our son never went into drugs and he never robbed anything or whatever. But, you know, to see people who are dealing with their loved one who does these things and it's so hard, you know, and then a lot of times they're suicidal and, you know, are successful at it, for lack of better words. And, you know, it's just, it tears you up. You know?
It does.
It really does, you know, because you think there, but for the grace of God, go I, you know, or my wife and I. And, so, you know, I just find it, awesome what you're doing. And I'm not just saying that, I mean that. You run your group runs a traumatic loss support group?
We do. That's a group who people can come if they'd have had a loss due to suicide or drug overdose.
Okay.
So it's for people who have lost children or spouses or siblings, anybody close
mm-hmm.
to them.
Okay. Now, someone comes to that, what is the procedure? Yeah.
Well, we have a registration process, so they call ahead of time, and so I can kind of get to know the person a little bit and tell them what happens in the group. We meet generally for 8 weeks. We meet every Tuesday night at 6:30 to 8 for those 8 weeks. The next group starts on September 11th.
Okay.
And we really try to provide a safe place for people to talk about their grief and to be able to feel those emotions without... Sometimes people get shunned or feel like they're getting shunned when they have a death due to suicide or to drug overdose. So we really try to provide a safe place for those people to get to know that they're not the only person out there.
Yeah. It's, you know, and I would think, ironically enough, I ran into a woman Thursday at the library and at the Hunterdon County Library in Clinton, and she yells out to me, "Larry, Larry," you know. And I looked at her, I knew her. I knew her whole background. I just couldn't remember her name. I'm terrible with names. 15 minutes after the show's over, I won't remember your name. I'll remember your face and what you do and everything, but your name, forget it. But anyway, she happened to be a woman who was friends with my wife and had come to a couple of our support groups, and she had taken the family-to-family class we teach for people who have someone in their family or know someone or work with someone with a mental health issue. And she had called my wife one morning, and while she's on the phone with my wife, she walked out in the backyard and she saw her son hanging from the tree while she's on the phone with my wife. And that was, you know, and she was saying she goes to a trauma, and this has been a fairly decent amount of time now, but she goes to a support group like that. And she was saying to me that she says, you know, she says, now when I hear other people's, it depresses me even more. Mm. She says, you know, I've come to accept what my son did, but to hear other people going, she says, I says, if you've reached your point, you don't have to stay
there.
That's
right, Larry.
You can leave, you know, and if you feel down a road that you want to come back, you can come back.
That's right.
You know, I says, I'm sure it's open, you know, is it?
I don't, yeah. This group in particular runs for the 8 weeks and then it's over. This last group that I had, I've had two sessions 6 weeks apart, just so it gives them an opportunity to, again, be there for one another. But there are other programs and other groups that are run in various places.
Right.
You go, it's to help you. So
sure.
If it's not helping you, then you're in the wrong place.
And if you're to the point where it's not helping and it's hurting you more than helping you, then it's time to leave. And she's
Absolutely.
Been in it for quite a while, you know. So with that, we have to take a short break. You're listening to the Hunterdon Medical Center Hour, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we have with us today Jennifer Kennedy, who's a licensed clinical social worker for Hunterdon Hospice, and we were talking about traumatic loss support groups. So curiosity, how did it get started?
Unfortunately, we've had a rise in the number of overdoses in our community.
Right.
And we've had a call. We've had calls come in, you know, wondering what help is available for people who have had these losses. And there really isn't much in this area. So we thought it was really important that we try to help serve the community. I lost my own father to suicide when I was 21.
Wow.
And I just, you know, there's a trauma that happens when you lose somebody like that that is really hard to get out of your mind. So you think about those things a lot. You can envision them. And so, you know, I know how hard it is, and I know what a blessing it is for the people that I've worked with to have other people, you know, that have experienced something similar to them.
Now, when you're working, like, with clients in hospice, and they've got X amount of time left to live, how do they react to that? I mean, I would imagine some of them are pretty broken up over it, and some are, you know, take it in a grain of salt.
In all stages, I think, Larry. Yeah. You know, some people are in acceptance, but it takes some work to get there. Other people are very fearful and, you know, don't know what comes next. And they worry about their relatives. They don't want to leave them with things to do around the house or no money.
Right.
Whatever their issues are, it can be very difficult for people to let go.
I would think if the person has a young family or young, even children of any age, actually, you know, under 30, it would be kind of nerve-wracking, to say the least.
It is nerve-wracking, and I think, you know, those people sometimes have a harder time, and we really try to work as a team to support them. We have a wonderful children's art bereavement program that runs once a year, usually in January, and that really gives at least the kids a place and the support person, if that's the other parent or an aunt or a grandmother, it gives them, you know, a place to work through some of those grief issues.
Do you think that once a year is enough?
Well, I don't think it's enough, but I think it's, you know, it's well run that way, and that's the way we have it set up
Well, how long does that run then?
It runs,
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but 12 weeks.
I'm just trying to remember if it's 8 weeks or 12 weeks.
Okay.
So it's another program with a set
amount of time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming all this is free?
The Youth Art Bereavement Program, I believe there is a fee for that.
Okay.
The other groups that we run a few groups, Larry. We run the Traumatic Loss Group. That is free. We run an Adult Bereavement Group, and that's for anybody who have lost anybody. That's on Thursday nights from 7 to 8:30 every other Thursday night, the second and fourth Thursday of the month.
Okay.
That's free. And then we have a child loss group. So those people who have lost children, really in any stage, are more than welcome to come there. And that one's free as well.
Right. It's just, you know, it's just so sad that there's so many people that need the different groups, you know, that fall into the different categories, you know. And you don't think about it. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously you do because you work at it every day. But people like myself, we don't think about it. I mean, something happens like to our friend. And we, and we get choked up about it. But, you know, then we look on the bright side that she's now with her husband and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it's to deal with it every day. I give you a lot of credit because, you know, I think that you have to be a special type of person, you know, to help people like that and not get over-involved.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
You know, I don't know if it's coming out right, but
no,
you know.
I understand because it's easy to do that. We really believe in self-care where I work. We have a great director, Margaret Doyle. We have our team that meets once a week and we talk about all of our cases so we can support one another if we're having trouble. We can brainstorm. We really try to encourage people to take their time off and to do things for themselves to keep themselves healthy, because it is really easy to get over-involved if you're not doing those things.
Right, right. And that's pretty much what I tell people with who have someone with a mental health issue. If you like walking the dog, walk the dog.
Right.
If you like reading, read a chapter in a book. You know, do what you like. If you like just sitting outside watching the sky and the clouds or whatever, you know, do that.
Right.
Whatever you feel comfortable doing to separate you from everyday reoccurrence of life.
Right.
You know, and it's great if you do it. You know,
it is great. And we try to encourage our caregivers, too, to do
that. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're having, you know, they're
absolutely,
sometimes
right.
give up everything.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
And it's really hard to take care of yourself.
Right,
when you're in
and
that
it's,
situation.
You know, it is, you know, definitely. Now, when it was started, when this organization was started, was it started by one person or was it started by a group of people who thought it should?
Hospice in general?
Yeah.
I'm not sure of the answer to that,
okay.
actually, Larry.
Okay.
I know we've been around for over 20 years.
Okay. Well.
I know that there are people, you know, that were involved or still somewhat involved. We have people who volunteer for us who have been in the, you know, in the system for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We also have per diem nurses who have worked for us, and then once they retire, they
right.
come back.
Right, right. Well,
come
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I know you have volunteers. Because like I told you, we had a volunteer on a couple of years back, a gentleman. You're in need of volunteers? Or
we run usually an education program twice a year
okay.
to recruit volunteers. Right now we have, I believe, around 125 volunteers.
Wow, that's and awesome.
That's beyond amazing. And
right.
they are beyond amazing. And we so appreciate their help. And they help us in so many different ways. They do clerical work for us. They sit with patients. They can run errands for us. I mean, they really give of themselves. You know, sometimes they stay with the patient's family as the person's dying.
Mm-hmm.
So there's training, like I said, twice a year. Another one is coming up, I believe, in October.
Okay.
And that, again, is a, I think it's a four or five week session. And we do look for volunteers, Larry.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know. But I can't, but wow, 125, that's awesome.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. Do you see people in their homes?
We do. We primarily see people in the homes.
Okay.
Occasionally people who live in a nursing home, we go to visit them as well. But they're primarily in the home.
And when you go to their home, I mean, what, you just sit down and have coffee with them, or?
We, the first time we go in is, I think it's the most difficult visit, you know, where we yeah. talk about the process and what we do and how we can help, and sign all the papers
right,
and do all
right.
the legality. But then it's really walking through, my job is really walking through the anticipatory grief and the grief with the family and the, with the person who is dying. The nurses are there to manage symptoms, so that's what they're doing,
right.
you know, making
right.
sure. Hopefully, we have a nurse available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to go out for emergencies. They can call us,
mm-hmm.
And they troubleshoot constantly to help people stay comfortable. That's our main goal.
Right. Now, I would imagine that there is some benefit from becoming part of a group of the group. What do you see as benefits to people who come to the group?
Well, I've had, you know, this last group that we ran, we had a whole family come in of a gentleman, a young man who had an overdose, and the mother and the father and the brother and the aunt all came to the group. So they really, you know, it seemed like they kind of got more connected as they shared their feelings about what was going on.
Right, right.
And then we had another woman who lost her son to suicide, and another couple who lost their son to suicide. And they really, I feel like, got to a place where they felt a little more acceptance and a little more supported by each other.
Right. Right.
I really saw that happen.
I see that a lot in support group that we run. You know, like my wife and I are in a good place now with our son. You know, he's doing very well. And everybody in the hospital that knows him thinks he's a wonderful success story because they know him when initially, you know, and how far he's come. And then, so when we have the support group, a lot of times people come in there in crisis situation, and some of the people around there have already been through it or done something or whatever. And so I'm assuming yours is pretty much the same way. If someone has, you know, well, yeah, did you try this? Or, you know, right. This worked for me. Well, I don't know if it will work for you, but you can try it, you know, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And it is helpful, you
it
know.
Is.
You know, it just, like I said, because people, you'd be surprised, or I was surprised years ago when we first started this, how willing people were to help other people in the similar situation.
That's one of the most amazing processes, I think,
right.
that happens.
It is. It's like, you know, you just wouldn't think it, you know. And I'm just so, I don't want to say happy, but thrilled with the way people interact with each other and help each other in their individual situation.
I think that's one of the things that really helps us to heal, Larry.
Yeah. No, I think so, too. I think you're right. You know, I know it helped me deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have done anything short of murder to help my son.
Of course.
But I wouldn't want to talk about it. For the mm-hmm. first 6 years, I didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife would want to talk about it. I'd go in the other room and read a book. Or I'd get in the car and go down to the truck stop and get coffee.
Right.
Because I didn't want to talk about it.
Right.
And there was a lady who was before Chris Maglione, who just retired from Intensive Family Support Services. Pat Shaw, I think her name was. And she helped me get through it so that I could open up about it. And, you know.
That's great.
It was like a support group for individuals, and we came to it. And when I first came to it, it was not that there wasn't room for anybody else, but there was nobody else there but us.
Right.
You know, so it was like a one-on-one thing. And, you know, and then a couple of weeks later or a couple months later, more people came. And, you know, so it was, but it just helped me.
It helps tremendously.
So I understand what, you know, how it could help what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's just, I don't know. It just seems to me that people, there's a lot more good people than bad people, you know. It's just that we don't see it all the time, you know, or that we don't recognize it, you know, and that's the thing. When someone is in hospice, like you said, they don't have to be in the hospital, right?
Right. Normally, I mean, they're not in the hospital.
Until the very end or something.
And not even then. We help yeah. people to die in their own homes, surrounded by their loved ones and their things and everything that they love.
Right, right. Because I know our niece was 30, yeah.
Mm.
And she had incurable cancer. And she wanted to die at home, and they set up a bed for her at home. And, you know, the last time we saw her, she was, you know, at home. And, you know, it was just so sad, you know, but she wanted to be home, you know.
It's really much nicer than dying in the hospital.
I would think,
yeah.
you know. I
yeah.
mean, nothing wrong with the hospital. I mean,
no,
I volunteer there,
all.
But,
yeah.
you know, it's just, I can understand that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it would be a little, you know, nicer because you're more comfortable.
Sure you are.
You're in your
you're
own.
Surrounded by your things.
Right. Your own family and your own beds or what have you.
Your
you
own
know.
Pets sometimes.
Right. Exactly.
They jump up on the bed.
Right.
And,
right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, on an average, I'm just throwing this out. How many do you people you deal with on an average at a given?
We normally have somewhere around 45 people on our list. And then I probably have around 15. We have 15 to 20 patients that the social workers see.
Okay.
The nurses see fewer people, but they see them more often.
Okay. That's an awful lot.
It is a lot.
You know. Now, when you have the traumatic loss support group, did that start the same way as hospice started?
Hospice was really a movement, and people were really trying to be there for people who were passing. And this program really came out of phone calls that I got looking for specific bereavement for people who had overdosed or committed suicide. And I just, unfortunately, I couldn't really direct them to too many places. So there are a few, and you can find them online.
Right.
But, you know, because there was nothing in the area, we really felt strongly that we wanted to give back to the community in this way.
All right. Now, if you have someone, you know, in this group, okay, what happens after the group's over?
Well, like we just did with the last group, I had them come in another 6 weeks after and then a following 6 weeks after just to give them a chance to.
In other words, they ended the group and then 6 weeks later they came back.
And then another
6 weeks they came back again. Now, what did they come back for, one day or?
They just came back for one session.
Day. Okay.
And we, you know, I try to do something that really honors the people who have passed. And we're talking now about doing a memorial service in November for all the people that have come through the group so that we can honor their loved ones.
Right.
So for a drug and overdose, there's another group called GRASP that meets once a month in Raritan Valley Community College. And that I think they meet one Sunday a month. I think it's the third Sunday. I'm not totally sure about that. But so there are other places they can get support with a therapist. You know, hopefully they connected with somebody in the group even, and they can help each other through the difficult times.
Right. And it is difficult times, you know. And especially now, it seems like heroin and opioids are so, I won't say free, but they're so
available.
Available. Yeah,
they really are. And now they have other drugs mixed in with them, fentanyl.
Yeah, that could be nasty.
It is. It's an awful situation, right. And people can have addiction problems, as you know, for a long time.
Sure.
Or they can, you know, just get a bad batch of,
right,
you know, drugs, right, and it can be over.
Right.
With.
So exactly.
This is just devastating for the family members, right, who are left behind.
Right. And a lot of times, I may be wrong, but I think a lot of times with drug overdoses, I don't think it's meant to be.
Right. Right.
Like an accident. You know,
right.
They took too much or didn't know how much to take, so they took a little more, or wasn't doing what it's supposed to do, and they took a little more.
And but every time is a gamble.
Right.
You just don't know.
Right.
What's going to
exactly
happen.
Exactly. And there are some that, you know, there are people that, you know, do commit suicide. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, mm-hmm, and have every intention of doing it. But it's, you know, with the drug overdose, I'm not saying that some of them don't, but
it's a different, trauma. It is a different trauma.
Right. And, you know, it's just so sad,
you know,
that they get addicted to this. And I know with mental health issues, a lot of times they'll do alcohol or drugs to stop the pain they're feeling,
mm-hmm,
in their head or in body or whatever, their thoughts or whatever. So consequently, you know, they'll start on drugs.
Right.
And a lot of times they have no clue what they're doing with
it.
That's
right.
And, you know, they overdose.
Mm-hmm.
Now with Narcan, it's, you know, great because you can save some of them if you get to them in time.
Right.
But a lot of times you don't, you know, because they're not actually, you know, doing it in public or in front of their parents or sisters or whatever, you know. So it is sad.
It's very sad, Larry.
It is. And it's such a shame that it's on such an upsweep, you know.
It is. I think, you know, I was looking at the statistics from last year, and I think by this time last year, there were already 15 deaths, drug overdose, in Hunterdon County.
Right.
So.
And that's just here.
That's just here.
Right. You know, and we're not one of the biggest counties,
right.
You know,
that's
population
right.
wise, you know.
That's right.
And, you know, stop and think, if 15, what about, you know, Mercer County or Bergen
right.
County or whatever, you know?
That's right.
And across the state. It's just mind-boggling, you know.
And I have a 13-year-old, and I worry.
Of course.
I worry for him.
Yeah, of course.
It's scary out there
yeah,
right now.
It is. It is. You know, we were talking previous show, you know, about how different it was when I was growing up and how it is now. Now, there's so much pressure on teenagers, oh, you got to be on the soccer team. Oh, you got to be, you know, the chief majorette, or you got to be this, you got to be that. You got to take this class, and you got to, you know, so you can get to this college, and you got to be in, you know.
Yeah.
And the pressure is just, you know, unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
And, you know, and I don't think, I really don't believe, maybe I'm totally wrong. I mean, I'm not an expert in this, but I don't really believe that the parents who are putting that pressure on the child realize what they're doing sometimes.
Of course not. Yeah, of course
you know,
not.
It's, oh, they've got to get to Harvard or, you
right.
know, Yale or wherever.
Right.
You know, and if you don't, you know, you're not going to be. And it's just, you know, I said earlier in the other show that I know somebody who their son was extremely smart. Was all this, was, you know, president of class, did this, did that, you know, all the stuff they were supposed to do. Graduated high school, was accepted to very prestigious school, and committed suicide.
Mm.
Found a letter, couldn't take the pressure.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it is, and, you know, imagine how the parents feel.
Right.
You know, because
right.
it wasn't him that put the pressure on himself, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said earlier in the other show, I says it's so different now. I mean, I was always told in school, oh, you got to go to college. The teachers would tell me, oh, you got, you know, you're great. You did this, blah, 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 blah. I graduated high school when I was 17. I joined the service 4 years. I didn't want anything to do with school, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank
by
you.
The way.
But anyway, you know, that's, you know, I just went to service. I took a couple courses through the military, you know, mm-hmm. in college, but never for a degree or anything. It was just some courses that helped me get better acquainted with what I was doing.
Right.
But it's just, you know, now it's like, you know,
I was always told too, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, you know.
Right.
You don't feel that way at the time. You feel like it's looming over you and it's always going to be that way. But,
right.
you know, those really difficult times do pass, you know, and you start being able
yep.
to feel differently.
You yeah,
know,
you
once
do.
You get
and,
through to the other side.
You know, it's so sad, you know, because of when you stop and say 15 people, you know, that's just...
Right here.
Yeah, right
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
And it's not even a year yet.
You know? That's right.
That's scary.
It is scary.
With that note, we have to take another quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple seconds.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunted In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunted In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, handyman extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Welcome back to the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, and we're very privileged today to have with us Jennifer Kennedy, who is an LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker with the Hunterdon Hospice. And we've been talking about hospice and what it does in the groups and traumatic loss groups and support groups and such. Jennifer, you had something you wanted to bring up.
I did. August 31st is the International Drug Awareness Day, and there is a prayer service in Califon at St. John Wayman's at 7 p.m. And I also wanted to mention the Suicide Prevention Lifeline and that number. And that number is 1-800-273-TALK or 8255.
Why don't you give that number again?
That's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255.
And what did you say, August?
August 31st.
31st?
Yep.
Is the
Drug Awareness
Day.
Day, yep.
And that night, they're going to have a service?
Right, at St. John Wayman's at 7 o'clock in Califon.
Okay. To remember those who passed?
Yes, and to bring awareness to the community that this is an issue and this is a problem that, you know, it takes all of us to try to help one another so these people can stop.
Yeah, you know. It's so sad. It really is. Now, I got to ask a question, and I don't know if there's a real answer to it or not, but, you know.
I'll do my best.
There you go. Can someone identify if someone they love needs help before it's too late?
As far as what, Larry?
As far as suicide or overdosing on drugs or...
You know, there are signs, you know, that people are becoming addicted. So if there's changes in behavior or legal issues start
right.
happening, slurred speech and people being clumsy, those kinds of things. And then the other thing is with suicide is, you know, if people are talking about it or giving their things away.
Yeah.
You know, those are some indications, but the best thing to do is to reach out to this helpline, you know, if you're contemplating suicide, and then talk with your doctor or talk with somebody that can help you find some help.
And I know that one of the myths about suicide is that if you think someone is contemplating suicide, you don't want to ask them because then that'll tell them to do it.
Right.
Well, that is so wrong.
Right. That's right.
You should approach them.
You should.
How you do it is, you know, the main part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be, you know, like gee, Joe, is everything all right? You know, you're looking, you know, last couple of days, you haven't been like yourself. You know, is something you want to talk about?
Right.
Something like that, rather than, are you thinking about killing yourself? No, you don't, you know, that, I mean, because a lot of times the people who are contemplating suicide really just want somebody to talk to,
yeah,
and they don't feel they can
times.
Talk to their parents or, you know, whatever. But a friend, they might be able to, you know. And, you know, it's just something that, or your brother or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, you know, don't be afraid to approach someone if you think they are,
right,
you know, contemplating it, because right, it's not going to push them to do it.
Right. It won't push them to do it.
9 times out of 10, it'll stop them from doing it because they'll have somebody to talk to about it. And, you know, if you don't know what to say, just listen.
It's always a good thing to do.
You know, and just listen to them. If they start talking, just listen. You know, and you can always suggest at the end, you know, that they talk to somebody on the hotline.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll have you give that number again in a minute or so.
Sure.
But, you know, to, they don't, you know, just so they know that someone cares.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times people do this because they don't think anyone cares.
You're right.
And, you know, so don't hesitate. If you think someone is considering suicide, ask them, you know. Be diplomatic about how you ask them, but still, you know, you can ask them. You know, so like I said, something like, Joe, you haven't been, you know, you want to talk because you haven't been, like, acting yourself in the last couple of days. I was just concerned that, you know, something's bothering you.
Right.
And then let them talk, you know, and 9 times out of 10, they'll open up.
And, you know, obviously, if anybody's in imminent danger, call 911.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, if you think they are, you know, beyond the point of talking, yes, then call 911. Because even if they weren't, it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
You know? So if you would give that number again, that would be great.
Sure. That's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. And then there's also another number, Larry, for substance abuse and mental health services.
Okay.
And that's 1-800-662-4357. 1-800-662-4357.
Okay. Now, if someone wanted to, well, we have about 2-3 minutes left. See how time flew when you're having
it
fun?
It did.
If someone wanted to register for the program or wanted to have more, you know, have questions or whatever, wanted to reach out, how would they go about doing
sure,
it? Do you have
a
website or a phone number? Or?
Yeah, I'll give a phone number. They could reach me through Hunterdon Hospice. That number is 908-788-6600, and they can ask for me, Jennifer Kennedy, and just let them know that they're interested in the group, and I'll be happy to talk to them. And that number again is 908-788-6600.
Now, is there, does hospice have a section on a Hunterdon Health, Hunterdon Medical Center's website?
We do. Yeah, you can connect with us through the website.
Okay. So if they go to the website.
HunterdonHealthcare.org, I believe.
Right, it's HunterdonHealthcare.org. Right. Okay. You know, I just think it's great what you guys are doing. I really do. And I think it takes a special type of person to do what you're doing. Like I said, I don't think everybody can do it. You know, I know I couldn't, but, you know, yeah, to talk to somebody once, yes, I could do that. But to do it on a daily basis like you guys do, I think it's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Because the people that you help, the families and relatives, surviving relatives and what have you, I think is awesome.
Thank you.
You know, the groups that you run are phenomenal.
Thanks.
And I can't thank you enough because, you know, there's a need, like you said. And unfortunately, it's growing and not, you know, not getting less, it's getting
right.
more.
That's
you
right.
know. And, you know, you never would have thought a few years back that you could walk down Main Street and approach somebody and buy drugs, you know.
It's unbelievable.
And it is unbelievable. And, you know, it's just beyond, you know, this is Hunterdon County, you know, this,
yeah,
you know,
right.
This isn't Patterson, and right. Nothing against Patterson or Trenton or Newark or whatever, but it's not a big city. It's a,
right.
You know.
And it's everywhere. It's prevalent everywhere.
Everywhere.
Any class,
right.
Any race.
Right.
Yeah,
just. Yeah, it is. And it's just, you know, it's just unfortunate, but I'm so glad that there is a group like yours that helps people.
Thank you. Me too.
And the number is 908-788-6600, and they can ask for Jennifer Kennedy.
That's right.
How about that? I even had it written down. So, yeah. I didn't remember it. I wrote it down. Jennifer, I can't thank you enough for being here. It's been a pleasure to have you. And anytime you'd like to come back, you know, feel free.
Thanks so much for having
me,
Larry.
It was been awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. And remember, folks, have a good week, and we'll see you next week, same time, same station. Have a good one.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
A college education, you don't have to go into debt before you even begin.
The actual price of a college education today could cost more than $200,000. Even if you don't qualify for financial need-based assistance, Premier College Funding can help you and your family cut college costs and find efficient ways to pay for college.
Call 908-788-3799 for a free consultation or visit us online at premiercollegefundingllc.com. Getting a college degree doesn't have to break the bank.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
USA Radio News.
President Trump is hosting a salute to heroes for ICE and CBP, recognizing them for their dangerous work and what they do to protect America's